One more.
Cool, man.
Where the bad folks go when they die, they don't go to heaven where the angels fly. Go to the lake of fire and fry, don't see you again until the 4th of July. Now I know the lady who came to lose, she got bit by a dog throughout her tooth. She went to a grave just a little too soon and flew away howling on the yellow moon. Where do bad folks go when they die? They don't go to heaven where the angels fly. Go to the lake of fire and fry. Don't see you again until the 4th of July. Look for a dry place to call their own and try to find somewhere in the reservoir bone. For the angels and the devil fight to make them their own. Where the bad folks go when they die, they don't go to heaven where the angels fly. Go to the lake of fire and fry, don't see them again till the 4th of July.
Right, you're listening to Locals Only here on 91.3 FM KXEI. My name is Don Jennings, and my guest tonight on the live segment of the show is Kurt Kirkwood, former frontman of the Meat Puppets. Thanks so much for coming down, Kurt.
Yep.
You have a brand new solo album out called Snow. Pete Anderson, the Grammy award-winning producer, produced it and released it on his Little Dog Records label, and we'll be listening to some songs recorded in Studio 2A here from you and talking with you over the course of the next hour. Really appreciate having you come in. It's kind of interesting to be able to sort of, you know, a lot of the artists that I get in here, local musicians, Arizona musicians, many of which are young people just starting out. So it's going to be really cool to be able to sort of pick your brain, somebody who's been out there and performing for, gosh, what, 25 years or more at this point?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Meat Puppets. Now, you formed in 1980? Is that when it was? In Phoenix?
Yeah.
Okay. With your brother Chris, and was Derek the original drummer as well?
Derek was the original drummer, yeah.
Okay. And so you kept that incarnation through most of the Meat Puppets existence, and towards the end of it all, you had a little bit of a different arrangement?
Yeah. Had Kyle Ellison, Shannon Somm, and Andrew Duplantis. So I swapped out two for three.
Mm-hmm. So given that, you know, at the end there, you know, you were the sole remaining member, obviously you were the sort of the creative force in the band to begin with, because you do most of the songwriting, right? And you're sort of the distinctive voice of the band. Given that you had, you were the sole remaining member of the band, and you had some additional people come on, why did you choose to then go under a solo name now that you've got some new music? Why not keep the Meat Puppets name around? Is it just a different musical direction or what?
Well, I guess I could, but I'm just by myself right now. And I mean, it's interesting because I have that kind of, I could probably do that and I could go ahead. I could have called this a Meat Puppets record.
Right.
You know, it's just one more word to get thrown around. There's always there's Kurt Kirkwood. Well, there's two words, Meat Puppets. And then you have to explain things a little more. That's probably just a matter of a little less explaining. And then, it gives me two different options. And, you know, if this doesn't work out, well, then I can go back and, you know, start playing casinos with the meat puppets and, you know, franchise that out and stuff. Get a bunch of kids or some chicks or something, and, you know, I'll just do it that way. And actually, I'll just hang out on stage and kind of nod approvingly while other people play. And
well, did you find that there was any sort of a backlash or anything? Maybe that's too harsh of a word. When you had new members in the band, you know, were there meat puppets purists who said this isn't the meat puppets?
Sure, there were those. And generally, it went pretty well. You know, it's it's interesting how that works. But, you know, I didn't really think about it. If people were yelling about it, most of the time, the band was pretty good. So take them a little while to get into it. People were curious, and everybody would like it to go the way they want it. But at the same time, you can't hold having integrity for 15 years against somebody either.
Sure.
And then finally selling out to having, you know, people playing in the band that aren't addicted to heroin or whatever. You know, I mean, that's a sellout. So I always wanted to find a way to sell out. I had always hoped that there was some way I could do it, you know, in some way, you know, aligning myself with something really unpopular. But as it turns out, I'm too stupid.
You're beaten to the punch.
Yeah, just not very smart. And all the things that I think are cool enough to work, you know, they never really irritate people as much as I would like. So, you know, I've always kind of been in the middle ground. I'd leave the punk rock to the happening folks.
Well, you're I'm assuming that you're still on good terms with both your brother and Derek. I saw that Derek had sort of put together the last compilation, the Classic Puppets album.
Yeah, he put together all the Ryko re-releases.
Oh, okay.
He did all that stuff, and that's something that, you know, his faith allows him. He's a member of both he and Chris joined really, you know, in really strict religious cult. They're not allowed to eat or breathe or anything, so, but they do allow them to work for money, and so fits right in.
Well,
they can't play music, but they can do menial tasks for minimum wage.
Well, speaking of the Ryko re-releases, and maybe this is a question better posed to Derek, but I was kind of curious, being from Montana myself, you know, the two albums that live albums that you released, one was Live in Montana, which was stuff that was recorded like a decade before, and then the Maxwell's, is that in New Jersey?
That's right, right, Hoboken.
And that one was, I think, released the same year as the actual performance. So why, out of all of the what were probably very incendiary live performances that you guys may have recorded, why those particular shows?
I just think it was a particularly odd show, I think. And I think it was the nature of the recording. Derek obviously liked it. I didn't really have much to do with it. I think he would probably, it's more that stupid irony, that Meat Puppets irony, live in Montana. You know, it's like, which we always liked. We loved the fact that we could go to Missoula or Bozeman or someplace we never heard of before we were in a band, you know, because we hadn't. I'd heard of Missoula because I used to read hunting magazines when I was a kid or something, you know?
Sure.
But, and I always, being from Phoenix, thought it would be neat to go someplace where there was a lot of trees and mountains like that. And you know, so when we got up there, we were thrilled. You know, I would have never seen Yellowstone or any stuff like that, really, I don't think, if I'd have gotten up there. I don't see why. It's great when you're there. So, you know, touring affords you a lot of cool stuff like that. And Bozeman, you know, there's a lot of kids there. They're stuck in the middle of nowhere. And it is a really nice place in the summertime. And in the winter, they snow, ski a lot, and what have you. So it's kind of idyllic. And you come in with your stupid psychedelic punk rock and you know, that kind of fits right in too, because they're almost a bucket away from extreme sports enthusiasts, just the people that are living there anyway. You know,
right.
It's not, I would think, an easy place to live.
Well, and having gone to high school and college there, you know, I can attest to the fact that we were pretty much starved for live music. So when artists came through, you know, a lot of the younger kids were turned out en masse to see them, you know, and so that was around the time. Sadly, I have to say that I didn't attend those shows, but was able to sort of relive or live the experience myself through that recording. And so that was really cool to see. But, you know, there were a lot of
The place. It was probably upstairs. Yeah. It was upstairs mm-hmm. at a hotel ballroom right. type weird place.
Top Hat in Missoula.
Yeah, just a strange place to have a gig anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just thought that was pretty interesting. And the Maxwell's gig?
Somebody, I don't know why, you know, Maxwell's was always a really, really cool gig. That, I don't know why that was chosen. I don't know who those people are. You know, they just kind of came out of the woodwork and wanted to put that out.
Okay.
And had it. And, you know, I think it's, I don't remember if they, you know, if it was people that I let set stuff up in there while I was playing or what. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I just... It's kind of fun that way. It's just probably more likely kind of akin to like a bootleg that they asked that they could sell rather than just sell it.
Sure. Okay. So you'd mentioned earlier that you've been there, done that. And you mean
try to be good?
Well, you've achieved a lot over the course of your career. And one thing I was wondering about is, you know, the band formed in Phoenix in the early 80s, and you know, now you're living in Austin. You performed most of the duration of the Meat Puppets in the Phoenix area, or you're based out of the Phoenix area. Is where you live significant to the success, the ultimate success of the band?
Oh, no. Although I don't think we could have done Meat Puppets outside of Phoenix. Phoenix, I mean, it did nothing to nurture the Meat Puppets. Phoenix does nothing to nurture its musicians. It hasn't got a music scene.
Right.
It tries harder to kill them with heroin than it does anything else. You know, it would probably, if they could, you know, had a council meeting and could supply the musicians with heroin legally so that they could kill themselves, they probably would. You know, because it would fit more in with the municipal structure up there. That's why it's, you know, it is. It's white punks on dope. It always was. And this is two-stoned. And, you know, I don't know why these places are like that to me, but that's what makes them good. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you could have had it outside of Phoenix.
Right.
You know, Phoenix for me, I'm still trying to explain it to people, you know. It's like, it's just purely about what we wanted to do, and it's not even about spirit or music or any of that stuff. It's just, it provided us the blank slate to get beyond, you know, emotion and spirit and passion and logic and good or bad or any of that crap, to just totally do what we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And try to achieve anything outside of seriously pleasing ourselves.
Well, now, of course, you're living out in Austin, which, you know, stakes their claim as the music capital of the world, or music capital of the U.S. at least.
Right, live music.
Right. So do you find...
As opposed to dead music. I prefer the music of the dead, or the nearly dead, or the damned at least.
Right. And,
you know, that's... Rocky Erickson is my favorite musician in Austin.
And so are you finding that there's a lot of musical creativity out there?
Yeah,
there is. Are you inspired by many of the Austin musicians?
You know, for me, if there wasn't another musician in the state of Texas, Rocky Erickson would make up for like 75% of it right now. He has for a long time. There's a ton of other stuff. I should say, I mean, in Austin, Texas, you know, has got amazing things that aren't really there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, George Jones, he's from Texas, but he's not really there. Jimmy Reed is dead. You know, there's the list can really go on and on. If you liked Pantera, they're from Texas.
Right.
They were amazing. You know, the Butthole Surfers, what else is there? The Butthole Surfers are one of the best bands that ever came down the road. You got the ZZ Top and the Stevie Ray Vaughan, still venerated as one of the greatest guitar players ever, all this stuff. It's pretty crazy. At the same time, it's Texas. It's an anomaly. Mm-hmm. You're like, you know, you could get shot. You know, you could get hung. You could... You get, you know, dragged behind an automobile. It's a horrible place in a lot of ways. I mean, but, you know, between the three, you know, Arizona, you live in Arizona, Texas, and California, you're like, you know what? fuck the Northeast. Anyway, the whole United States is a shithole. I've decided. I could stay in Texas. I really don't care.
Fair enough.
I don't care where I live anymore. Texas is, it's proven to me, it's just, it's all the same.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind Montana, honestly, if they could just cease winter. I'm a yes. Southwesterner, so that doesn't really work for me, but.
Don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So anything from Arizona catching your attention these days?
Well, I saw Calexico at the Austin City Limits Festival last year. That mm-hmm. was cool. They were good. Whatever Elmo Kirkwood is doing, he's a genius, and, you know, a Satan worshiper, so I try to follow. one of the people that's come out of the woodwork trying to align themselves with me by using my last name, and he actually follows me around. That's, I don't know an awful lot besides that, you know, I never really did, you know. I know that, when I lived in Phoenix, everyone else hated us because we wouldn't pay attention to what they were doing. Because it's like, that's the music scene there. Tucson has always had more, seems like that people, you know, are more actually, I'm not sure what the difference is. It just seems like they kind of know each other more. It's like it's different, you know that. It's
very different. Incestuous music scene, I've always said.
Is that what the word is?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like Austin, you know, there's probably more support. You could call it support, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, the one thing, the one difference is that, you know, for me, Austin, wherever, when there's support like that, it kind of backfires in the arts. I just don't need any help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it goes. It's art. It's a lonely road. And I've been reviled for it because I'm not, you know, a joiner. It's been really hard for me. So if Austin's the live music capital, I don't speak that language. There's no they in music. There's just me. It's my vomit.
Okay, so tell me, Kurt, looking back over the course of your career, you know, for an outsider, for a fan,
but there is an I in chimpanzee.
for an outsider looking at the course of the Meat Puppets career, you know, it's easy to pick out certain what may have been pivotal points, you know, at least in terms of the success of the band, whether it was getting signed to SST, whether it was Kurt Cobain citing you as a major influence and inspiration and performing with them on Unplugged and touring with them and touring with Stone Temple Pilots, that kind of thing. But for you, looking back over the span of that time, what moments stand out to you as pivotal points, whether it's, you know, as far as the success or as far as your musical development?
The first time I ate at a White Castle hamburger, I realized if I could eat that, I could probably be on the road and it would be all right. Because, you know, if it didn't kill me within 5 minutes, something that tastes like that and doesn't kill you within 5 minutes of eating it, you know you're going to be all right. And so I figured this is what people eat. I can do this. Let's see, the next probably, you know, They come in small things like that. You know, obviously some of the things you mentioned were fairly large things, but when I realized that my spiritual brother was Prince, and that, you know, I was supposed to have recorded Purple Rain, and that there was a snafu in the cosmos, that was another big moment for me. And, you know, just took all that. I took all my feelings of rejection and disappointment and channeled them into my next indie album with the Meat Puppets. But let's see. You know, I mean, it's weird stuff like that. Really, the big stuff for me, it always goes in one ear and out the other. Because you're like, that's what they call sunshine up your ass. You know, it really is. Yeah. It really is. I mean, that's how all these people do it. You go, gosh, how can you stand being in the presence of the Baldwins and the Hiltons of the world? And what's it like to actually get an accolade from Elton John or whatever they say, to like the super famous, you know? Holy cow. I mean, you've done, Mr. Simon, you've had 25 number one hits and whatever. He's like, you know, I spend all my time worshiping Satan. I don't notice a fucking thing.
Okay, tell me about Eyes Adrift. How did that project come together?
Well, I started trying to do this solo thing out on the road in 2001, and I toured around right the month before 9/11 and the 2 months afterwards. So it was a really charged, fun time, and I was really kind of getting into it. I went up to Washington, did Seattle, and Chris came out to the show, and he was been, I don't know, several years since he'd done anything seriously with music. He was playing some stuff with Kim Thayil, who was in Soundgarden, and also wasn't doing too much. So they were doing a thing called 13 Coins, and some such thing, named after a restaurant they like up there. But he said, you want to do a band? And I said, well, you know, that sounds like a good idea. So the next day, I was driving back to Austin. I was, you know, in the middle of somewhere, like Idaho, I think, you know, coming, I think you cut through Idaho, yeah. And Bud called me. Bud Gaw, and I had never met him. I met Brad Noel, and I was really loved that Sublime, what I'd heard of it, and you know, knew kind of, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I knew a lot about him, but I never met Bud. So anyway, he called me up out of the blue and said, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what to do. I'm out of the Long Beach Dub All Stars. I want to keep doing music, and I just figured I like you, what you do, and I figured I'd call you. And so I said, well, that's a strange coincidence, because I just was up in Seattle talking to Chris Novoselic, and he wants to form a band. I said, are you familiar with Chris? And, you know, did you like Nirvana? Did you like, you know, the bass playing? And would you like to, you know, to do a band with him? He's like, well, you know, I mean, I don't really, he said, I heard it and all that stuff. Of course, everybody heard Nirvana, but Bud's another one of those guys that's just so, you know, he's involved in his thing. He's sunk into it deep, and there's so much music going on around Long Beach that's so not, you know, it's anything else. Mm-hmm. It just takes up, you know, their periphery. It's good. That's a cool scene over there. They got a lot of different things, from hip hop to the punk rock and all this kind of slamming together. And I really, you know, really got on good with that whole group of people over there, the Sublime people there, you know, just way into, you know, making fun music. That's about as good as I could put it. So we did it. They came down to, Chris actually drove down to Austin. No, I take that back. He tried to drive to Austin. He drove to Denver, and he flipped out. And he called. That was almost the first Eyes Adrift song. He called me up, and he goes, I'm in Denver. It's a shithole. So I wrote the song called What a Shithole. And he's like, it sounds too much like Nirvana. So he flew back. He flew in from Denver. I was like, yeah, we can't sound like Nirvana, you know. You know, that's... Nobody sounds like Nirvana. Nobody rips off Nirvana, you know. And they, you know, they never listen to what I do. It's just all, that's way too confusing, isn't it? You know, gosh, I don't want to sound like, you know, Neil Young or the Beatles either, but too bad. I mean, so, you know, Bud flew out. Chris and Bud met. I met Bud. And then we just started recording, just like that. It's just totally crazy. We recorded that record having known each other for 48 hours. We started in and did it in like 20 days. And but we had a lot of common ground, you know, was in terms of like, okay, everybody's had an element of success to their careers that was, you know, harpooned by drug abuse and, you know, like the, in from, you know, everything from the little sunfish getting one of its eyes put out by, you know, grade schoolers all the way to the Moby Dick story of Nirvana, you know, and Sublime. It's just, so we were like, let's try and have a band and not shoot ourselves in the foot on purpose, which is really what happens. It's just so obvious. You can see it so clearly. Wow, what should I do with my success? Buy a bunch of crap that I don't need, or sabotage it, or these things that, you know, it leaves you naked to the chimpanzee in you. It's just like, oh, look at the still unmuddied water. Let's shit in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's human nature, I guess. I don't know. They take a drink from it, but at some point they're going to get bored with just drinking out of it and take a crap in it. So we said, let's try and have this pool, you know, and we'll build a nice, really, really detailed toothpick sculpture of a toilet next to it. You know, so if we have to poopy, you know, we got something to do it in, but try not to, you know, like even make a wee-wee into the nice pool.
Interesting analogy. So ultimately then, what caused the demise of that project?
We filled the toothpick sculpture up with caca and shoved it into the pool.
On that note, I do want to thank you so much for coming down, Kurt. It's definitely been a pleasure. Keep us posted about, you know, I hope that you'll come back through town, do a performance here. We'll let you get back out on the road. And thanks so much for coming down and joining me here on Locals Only.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right.